WTJU. And do you remember, like, the first time you walked in? What was that like?
Yeah, absolutely. I do remember it. It was August 17th, 1989. I remember it so well. As soon as I moved to Charlottesville, I was hearing the station and just blown away by the mix of music that it had and the way it seemed to instantly sort of provide a soundtrack to the community.
Yeah, for sure. Expanding on that, how do you think it sort of connected or influenced the culture of Charlottesville?
Charlottesville is a town full of passionate people who really care about whatever they care about. It's a town that attracts artists and thinkers and dreamers and doers and a lot of weirdos in the mix.
Yeah, that's for sure.
It's a good place to be one of those. And something that I love about WTJU is that it mixes all kinds of weirdos and all kinds of artists. So it has a mix of, I mean, the fact that it has classical programming and local programming and jazz programming, as well as the rock stuff that initially caught my ear and brought me to WTJU. It's the kind of thing where you come for whatever you come for, and you end up staying because there's this crazy mix of everything else. So I started listening to WTJU because I was really into the punk rock and indie rock that it was playing. And that's when I started hearing all this jazz, all this R&B, all this this bluegrass, and all this music that I'd never heard before, just brought by, you know, these really passionate enthusiasts of WTJU.
Yeah, that's awesome. How did WTJU sort of influence your taste in rock and I guess your respect for it?
Well, I mean, I've been writing about music a long time, really.
Yeah.
That's my life's work. And WTJU has unquestionably been the biggest influence on my life as a listener, as a writer, just in terms of that sort of passionate perspective in music that it's always provided. And it was when I started listening to WTJU that I started listening to entire genres that I'd totally missed. I mean, that's where all my jazz education came from, and that's where I got into stuff like New Orleans R&B. Being able to listen to shows, kind of legendary shows, like Professor Bebop, Tom Morgan's Bartender's Bop, or, you know, Chuck Taylor, who'd been doing all kinds of music. It was just an amazing sort of education in the fact that you could be that passionate about all types of music outside whatever little neighborhood it was that, you know, that might have been your door in.
Yeah.
I guess that's a wildly mixed metaphor, but something I love about WTJU is that it encourages people to get really far out there in terms of specializing with whatever neighborhood and music they're really passionate about, but it also encourages people to check out each other's shows and to, you know, to listen to other styles of music. So listening to WTJU over a 24-hour period is just to be exposed to so many different ways of seeing and hearing and experiencing the world.
For sure. What was your show like when you were here?
Well, I began doing, of course, the overnight rock graveyard shift show.
2 to 6, yep.
Yeah, so I was on from midnight to 6 a.m.
Wow.
And I was playing all kinds of stuff. I was mixing up a lot of guitar bands from all over the world. One thing about WTJU, at the very beginning, it had a very international view of indie rock. So it, you know, it had strong connections to, say, Flying Nun Records in New Zealand, which at that point was a New Zealand label that was known pretty much only by Hardcore Cognoscenti in the U.S. But WTJU had a really strong relationship with them. And so WTJU just had all these crazy New Zealand arty guitar bands who basically no other station in the country was playing them. And that's how that had a huge influence on a lot of the music that came out of Charlottesville.
Yeah, definitely. And I know now we got to do an interview with King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard. So I guess it's sort of a new modern thing. Do you remember having like a biggest success or any sort of like moment of panic while you were doing your show or any sort of memory like that?
Yeah, I have to say probably the most stressful time I was ever on the air at WTJU, it was one afternoon in the summer of 1995.
Mm-hmm.
And I was doing my afternoon Wednesday show, Description Without Place, which I did for years and years. And I came in and, of course, I was following the Zebra Club at the Internationalist show, which mostly played African music. And Jim Schneider was the DJ on the air at that point. And he kept answering the phone and saying, yep, okay, the rock DJ will be in. He'll explain it for you. And I said, gosh, Jim, a lot of people calling in today. What's the matter? He said, didn't you hear the news? Jerry Garcia just passed away. And news had just been announced. And at that point, I knew barely anything about the Grateful Dead. So I was on at 2 o'clock and there were all these people calling in saying, is it true? Is it true? Because of course, there was no internet at that point and there was no 24-hour media at that point. And people were just hearing this rumor and calling into the station. And I started playing a bunch of Jerry Garcia stuff and Grateful Dead stuff. And I was conscious of trying to minister to this flock that I didn't necessarily know what their grieving rituals were. So when people started calling, I just started asking, hey, in the Deadhead culture and in that religion, what are the funeral songs? What is the appropriate stuff to play at a time like this? And people were really good about telling me, you know, this is, you know, the Deadhead funeral song. This is what you play. Somebody said, play Eyes of the World. Somebody said, play Broke Down Palace. And it was beautiful because for me, I was, you know, in the middle of this situation where a lot of people were grieving and they were able to sort of give feedback to me as it was going on about how to do this in a way that was respectful and appropriate to that culture. And
it's funny,
the next afternoon, you know, Hal on the Roots Rock show was able to really give a fully Deadhead literate and totally like Deadhead culture saturated proper WTJU tribute to Jerry Garcia. But because I was just the DJ who happened to be on the air at the time, I had to kind of get baptized by fire that way. But just, you know, wanting to do it right. But that's a thing about WTJU is that it's not really segregated in terms of genre, which is something that was different from any other radio station I'd ever been involved in, because people were really passionate about the other parts of the station besides whatever department they were in.
Right. So now, I mean, that seems pretty quintessential to TJU as far as like helping out your brethren, but what else do you think? Was there ever a time when you were at TJU that was like, this is so totally TJU?
Well, it's funny. The station I'd been most involved with before that was my college station. And it was one where there were different departments and there was rock and there was jazz and there was R&B and there was folk. And they were really adversarial, really kind of competitive to the point of being sort of at each other's throats. And everybody was constantly, you know, angling for more time in the schedule. It was a thing where the department heads were basically at war all the time. I just kind of thought that's what community radio was. That's what listener-supported radio was. So when I started listening to WTJU when I went there for grad school in 1989, I was completely blown away that it wasn't adversarial and it wasn't competitive, that all the departments were basically, all saw themselves as part of this community. And it's something that was beautiful. It was first listening to the marathons. The first marathon I ever heard, it was the jazz marathon in the fall of 89. Something that blew my mind was that you had not just the jazz DJs doing jazz shows, but you had the rock DJs doing shows and the folk DJs and the classical DJs, and everybody was pitching in with their special area of expertise to participate in the jazz marathon. And I kind of had no idea that radio could be like that. We're just different kinds of music lovers all working together and serving listeners that way.
Yeah, that's super neat. I guess, like, reading your books, it's pretty apparent, like, how you analyze things. And so, do you have any sort of, like, analysis as to why WTJU works? I know you've mentioned the people and sort of bonding together, but what is that thing or that spirit that really makes it come together?
I think it's the absence of walls. I think if anything defines WTJU, it's that there aren't these walls between departments or between styles of music, so that, especially considering that its long history and that it has, you know, deep roots in all these different genres, that it's a place where you can just turn it on as a listener and you don't know what you're going to hear, whether it's jazz programming or rock programming or folk programming or whatever. But you know that there's going to be a mix that exposes you to new stuff that you might love or, you know, occasionally you might hate it. But you're going to hear stuff that's interesting and that's been explored. I mean, for me, the ability to just turn it on as a listener, and I love being able to listen to it, you know, in my laptop in Brooklyn from hundreds of miles away, which, you know, I thought I would never be able to do. It's amazing to turn it on and always know that it's going to be a DJ who knows their stuff and who cares passionately about their stuff and is not following a playlist that tells them what to play and is not you know, just following house rules, but is really engaged in a really artistic way in that sort of communication with the listener. And I love being the listener in that relationship. And I loved being the DJ as well. That was just a hugely formative experience for me.
How has that digital stream and like listening in Brooklyn, how do you think that has made TJU more accessible, not only to yourself, but how is it viewed outside of Charlottesville?
Well, it's amazing that as far as I could tell, WTJU is a real cultural ambassador from Charlottesville to the rest of the world. I mean, if you meet people and you tell them about the University of Virginia or you tell them about Charlottesville, it's funny that the same three things keep coming up. What people know about and will say in response is A, Thomas Jefferson, B, the sports teams, or C, WTJU. It's funny that that's largely because of all the musicians who've come out of Charlottesville and who've come out of WTJU and have sort of repped WTJU to the world at large. I mean, it's really kind of amazing how much just ambassadorial work WTJU does on behalf of the university and the whole community to the rest of the world. And I moved to New York about 15 years ago, and it's really funny how you keep finding echoes of Charlottesville and echoes of the university everywhere you go, and WTJU was such a huge part of that. There was a night a few years ago where I had a burrito coming, and the guy who delivered the burrito, you know, knocked on the door, dropped off the burrito. Then he asked my wife and I if we happened to come from Charlottesville because he heard our radio and he heard that we were listening to Professor Bebop and he recognized Professor Bebop's voice coming out of a radio. And he was, hey, you guys are Charlottesville people. And we said, yeah,
look.
And we chatted and we thought, isn't that amazing that there's something like WTJU where we can recognize around the world that we have this intense, fantastic aesthetic experience in common?
Yeah, for sure. What is your advice to current WTJU interns such as myself or to DJs there now?
Well, just, I mean, the great opportunity of being part of the community that makes WTJU happen is just being able to educate yourself about music and to be in touch with other people who are as insane about music as you are and to hear what they like and what grooves of theirs you might be interested in hearing. And something that I always loved about TJU was different DJs listening to each other's shows and picking up ideas, picking up artists, picking up sounds that would echo on in their own shows. And it's funny that every time I turn it on, as somebody who's been listening to WTJU for, gosh, almost 30 years at this point, what a scary thought, but that there are some DJs that I'm always turning WTJU on and hearing exciting new voices and exciting new ears and exciting new tastes. And there are others that I've been listening to for decades. DJs like Tyler McGill or Dominic DeVito. These are guys I've been listening to for decades at this point and am still learning from. And that's something that's incredible about WTJU is that it has those sort of links with its past and with this deep heritage of, you know, God bless us and help us all, absolutely insane music lovers in Central Virginia, all over the community. And yet it's always expanding and always growing and always has its ears open for new sounds. And something I loved about the marathons especially was I would do a Dylan show every year with Don Harrison. He's still doing the Dylan show and is still blowing my mind and blowing a lot of people's minds routinely on Radio Wowsville. And something I love when Don and I would do this Dylan show is that you would get the craziest WTJU listeners from all over the listening range, people calling in from all these spots on the map that I'd never heard from, calling with their particularly devout Dylan requests. You know, there were people who'd call in every year for crazy deep cuts from records, and it would get to where we would recognize the voices years after year. We're like, oh, this is the guy who calls from If Dogs Run Free every year. And it was amazing to hear all these voices from all over the listening range, which at this point is all over the country. And that's a really exciting, beautiful thing in itself. It's funny, I wrote a book last year about David Bowie called On Bowie. And there was a song that I wrote about in my Bowie book called Candidate Demo, which it was a deep cut from one of the 1990 archival CDs that David Bowie never released it at the time. He recorded it in 1974, but somehow just left it in the vault all those years. And I only know this song because when I used to do a David Bowie marathon show, on WTJU. There was a listener every year who would call in for it. Her name was Robin. I never met her, and I don't even know what her last name was, but she would call in every year for this song, and she made me a fan of this song. And I had a chapter about this song in my Bowie book, and it's funny that I hear now all the time from people who got into that song after reading my chapter about it. And it's funny that it all comes down to this really devout David Bowie fanatic somewhere in Central Virginia who would call every year and request this one completely obscure David Bowie song. And I love that WTJU is a place where the listeners and the DJs and the audience at large all communicate together to sort of to pass music on and to keep music alive and to share music.